The 2006 Sunstone Symposium presents Session 301, The Yoga of Christ, with presenter Phil McLemore.
In church discourse, it's always perplexed me that when we talk about the love of God, we always center on the phrase in Matthew 22, love your neighbor as yourself, in preference to John 13, where Jesus clearly says, a new commandment I give unto you, that you are to love one another as I have loved you. What a wonderful ideal. And this is certainly the ultimate vision of love and the key to spiritual growth, which results in unity within ourselves, mind, body, soul, unity with God, and unity with other human beings in creation. To accomplish this vision of love, we must be light and pure. Now, for the past 6 years, I've been immersed in the study and practice of Eastern religions and philosophy, principally in the yogic tradition. Yoga, for most in the West, is about stretching and body contortions. But yoga in its proper setting means two things. It means a state of intimate union with God, and it also means the disciplines and practices and lifestyle that leads to this union. The goal of yoga is to open oneself to higher states of consciousness, whereby one may see God, and through this direct experience of God, begin to see with and through His eyes. Can we love as Christ loved without seeing through the eyes of God? Some yogic traditions call this state divine consciousness. Paramahansa Yogananda calls this state Christ consciousness. If you've read the autobiography of a yogi, you are familiar with the life of Paramahansa Yogananda. He came to America from India in 1920, representing what we might call restored yoga. It's just absolutely, through a particular line of gurus, you know, who have that authority. It's just fascinating to me that even in metaphysical traditions, we had this debate over which is the true church or the true yoga. It goes on. Yogananda's stated mission was twofold: to demonstrate that the original teachings of yoga and the original teachings of Christ were the same, and to thereby bring together East and West. The second part of his mission was to assist others to have the direct experience of God. He lectured and taught in major cities throughout America, but did not get to Salt Lake City until 1931. He came primarily because many were telling him not to go to Salt Lake City. They told Yogananda that Mormons were evil, devilish people. And the evidence for that was the actual appearance of little horns on the heads of Mormons and cloven hoofs. Yogananda said, I have to see this for myself. And so he came to Salt Lake. Later, after his visit to Salt Lake, he said, I found that the reports about the Mormons were false. I found a friendly, reverent, and good people. Now, on a side note, just in case you don't know, during his lecture tour in Salt Lake City, a young Salt Lake girl of 18 years of age named Faye Wright attended his lectures and became convinced that this was a man who had truly seen God. And so with her mother's permission, she went to California, to Yogananda's ashram, and became his disciple. Not just, you know, a go-to-church disciple, she became a celibate nun disciple. She later became his personal secretary, and in 1955, became the third president of his organization, Self-Realization Fellowship, which position she holds today at age 92. Their general authorities consist of 120 celibate monks. Now for me, that puts a little grim spin on the notion of following the brethren. See, that's sinking in. Frankly, I've not yet succeeded in wearing a white shirt to church, which several priesthood leaders have assured me is an important part of following the brethren. Fortunately, the Self-Realization Fellowship does not require celibacy of its general membership. I wonder if I had to share the white shirt thing with them. Maybe that would help. The leadership at Self-Realization Fellowship at their headquarters and throughout their temples and centers celebrate Christmas every year by holding an 8-hour meditation on December the 24th. And they do this 8-hour meditation with the intent of acquiring the mind and consciousness of Christ. And then on December the 25th, they hold a social celebration of his birth. Now maybe you would like to try suggesting that at your next board council. Anyway, at the same time that I'm doing my yogic thing and my work as a hospice chaplain, I'm often reading to patients from the New Testament. It seems to be the most common spiritual text for those that I visit. And as a result of my immersion in yoga, I'm now seeing the teachings of Christ in a whole new light. Many of the New Testament passages we gloss over in Sunday school or that discomfort us because they don't fit the typical Mormon view or we chalk up to mistranslation or to lofty principles that only a sanctified person could keep make absolute perfect sense in an Eastern context. Is it possible we have westernized and Mormonized the teachings of Christ to such a degree that we have lost some critical perspectives and insights? Since our time is short in a devotional setting, let's just take a fresh glimpse at two passages that have to do with lightness and purity, which I believe are foundational for loving as Christ loved. In many depictions of yogis, we see them in a lotus position and they're levitating. You know what I'm talking about. They're up in the air. Reflective of lightness. Now, did Jesus levitate? Well, sure he did. He eased right over, right across those stormy waters, not burdened by the storm, and one in the least bit. At the end, when he ascends, I mean, that's kind of the ultimate levitation, is it not? He levitated all the way up into heaven. And I would say, whoa, if someone can levitate that high, we need to listen very carefully to what this person has to say. So these two passages. If I read, I'm reading from the New King James. If I quote, I'm quoting from King James. So I'll let you sort that out. Matthew 5:8. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Matthew 11, take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Now, we don't have time for linguistic studies this morning, but just believe me when I tell you that the word yoke and the word yoga are the same word. They mean to unite. The implication is oneness with God. Jesus says, take my yoke. He, in essence, is saying, practice my yoga, and your burden will be light. How can a burden be light? I mean, a burden is a burden. Is it just because this yoga makes us stronger? Is it because he helps us shoulder the weight? Those are kind of the typical interpretations we put on that. Frankly, I know many wonderful spiritual people who study spiritual writings, who pray, who serve, who work at loving others, and still are not quite sure why they don't feel light. And many have just accepted the fact that life, frankly, is a facing of a series of burdens. I would say, let's do something different. Let's try the yoga of Christ. Simply expressed, there are four classic yogic paths or traditions And there are monastic communities devoted to each one of these as a primary but not exclusive focus. There's bhakti yoga, which is the yoga of devotion. These people write wonderful poems and prayers of devotion to God, and they seek God through their devotion. There's jnana yoga, the yoga of wisdom. There's karma yoga, the yoga of selfless service. And there's raja yoga, the yoga of meditation. Now, I would submit that Jesus practiced and was an example of each of these forms of yoga: devotion, wisdom, selfless service, meditation. Meditation? Did Jesus meditate? And the scriptures tell us he went up in the mountains early to pray. And the scriptures tell us he stayed up all night in prayer. Do you really believe he spent all that time going through lists of what he was thankful for and asking for what he wanted? He was meditating. The desert fathers who separated themselves from a corrupt church starting in the 200s BC and went out into the Egyptian desert to commune with God defined prayer the exact same way Raja Yoga defines meditation. Now, I have just finished a fresh reading of the Bhagavad Gita, which discusses each of these forms of yoga. And this time as I read it, I noticed very clearly that there was a certain teaching associated with each form of yoga and that supported each form of yoga. It is the core, it's one of the core principles of most Eastern philosophies, and I now call this principle the yoga of Christ. It is the principle and practice of non-attachment. Now, some writers call it detachment. I like the feel of non-attachment, so that's what I will use. It is a principle that makes Eastern teaching hard for Westerners to accept, because they say, how can you love without being attached? The other side would say, how can you be free to love when you are stuck and attached to so many things? One Buddhist monk defined purity as being non-sticky. When you cling to anything, it limits your vision and movement. Non-attachment comes in two forms. Number one, attachment to outcome. This belief that we have that we can do one thing and expect another thing. I can keep these commandments and get that blessing. And so we become attached to the outcome of our behavior. And what happens when we don't get that outcome? What happens when we don't get that blessing? Well, there's weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth and misunderstanding and questioning of God and all sorts of emotional and spiritual turmoil. Well, don't have that attachment to outcome. You see, that's part of the philosophy. We have a song. Do what is right. Let the consequence follow, right? No, we do what is right, and I want that blessing. Number two is the obvious one. We're attached to stuff. We're attached to people. We're attached to situations. Did Jesus teach the principle and practice of non-attachment? It seems like I remember a young man coming to him and saying, oh, Lord, I want to follow you. Whatever you want, I will follow you. Jesus says, oh, that's great. Get rid of all your stuff and let's go. And the young man, sorrowful because he had a whole lot of stuff, turned and walked away. Well, he didn't mean that for everybody. I learned that in Sunday school, right? That was just for that. It was just a test for him. That's not a principle for us. And of course, many of the yogis in India, they don't have stuff. They gave up all their stuff and they wander around and they beg and they teach and so forth. Now, I really don't believe I'm obviously drove a car here today. I didn't walk. I didn't levitate here. So, you know, I have possessions. But I really believe Jesus is saying we should have no attachment. Really? Well, let's see. Rory, could you be my helper and there's an overhead here. If you push the on button, we're going to look at a few passages. Now, these are passages you're all familiar with, and they're just a sampling, a small sampling of the richness of the teachings of the Yoga of Christ. So let us begin. Oh, you're familiar with Matthew 5:40. If someone takes your coat, offer them your cloak. I get those mixed up sometimes, but they take one, give them the other. What the heck? Matthew 5:42, give to him who asks. If someone asks to borrow something, let him have it. What the heck? I don't need this stuff anyway. Matthew 6:19, do not lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. Anything that can be destroyed or stolen. Jesus is saying, don't be attached to those things. Matthew 5:29 and 30, you're familiar with this. If your right eye offend thee, pluck it out. No, thy right eye causes thee to sin, depending on the translation. Pluck it out. If your right hand offends you or causes you to sin, cut it off. I wonder why he's using right hand. What do you think? Most of us right-handed? Is that the most important hand? Oh. Yeah. Don't be attached to sin. Don't even be attached to your bodies. Matthew 6:25. Therefore I say unto you, do not worry about your life, what you shall eat, what you shall drink, nor about your body, what you shall put on. Is life not more than food, and the body more than clothing? 31. Therefore do not worry, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? Don't be attached to those things. Section. Matthew 5:39. You're familiar with this one. If someone strikes you on the right cheek, give him your left. Beginning of chapter 6, take heed that you do not do your charitable deeds before men to be seen by them, otherwise you have no reward. Verse 5, when you pray, do not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the corners of the streets, that they may be seen of men. Matthew 23. All their works they do to be seen of men. He is the greatest among you, shall be your servant. So what is Jesus telling us? Don't be attached to image, pride, reputation, position, power. Matthew 6:34, take no thought for the morrow. Don't be attached to outcome. Don't be attached to the future. Luke 9:62, whosoever puts his hand to the plow and looks back is not fit for the kingdom of God. Don't be attached to the past. Matthew 6:14 and 15, the words of Jesus after the Lord's Prayer. If you forgive men their trespasses, your heavenly Father will forgive you. But if you do not forgive men their trespasses, neither will your Father forgive your trespasses. If you are unforgiving, according to this passage, you are unforgivable. Well, why is that? Because you refuse to relinquish your attachment to your anger, being offended, your resentments, etc., etc., etc. He's saying give those up. You're familiar with Matthew 7. Judge not, lest you be not judged. How can you say to your brother, let me remove the speck from your eye, and look, a plank is in your own eye? Jesus wants us to give up our judgments, our comparisons, our condemnations. Do we hold on to these things? And now for the hard one. Matthew 10:37. He who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. He who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Don't even be attached to your family. Ah, I hear the screams and wails of Mormons from Salt Lake to Bangladesh. Are you kidding me? We are sealed to our families. Don't give me that non-attached stuff. And what's interesting is after this particular teaching of non-attachment is followed by, he who does not take up his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Is this a hint that this is probably one of the more powerful attachments? Okay. Now I ask the question. What is it that burdens us? What is it that creates heaviness and suffering in our lives? Well, take a look at that list. Possessions, treasures, riches, our bodies, sin, what we eat, drink, and wear, image, pride, reputation, power, the past, the future, our anger, our judgments and comparisons, our families. What is it that creates burdens and suffering in your life? If all those things were gone, would you have burdens? Would you have suffering? Well, no, you wouldn't. No wonder that yoke is light. Now, I'm a bit of a mind reader. And I hear some of you thinking, okay, so the basis of suffering is gone. Lovely. But wait a minute, these things make me happy. My stuff, my power, my family, don't take them away. Where shall I go for happiness? How about God? When Jesus said, love God with all your heart, might, mind, and strength, when he said, seek first the kingdom of God, did he mean pray a little, go to church a bit, do some home teaching and visiting teaching, and then go cling to your stuff? No. What he's saying is, find your peace, find your fullness, find your wholeness, find your happiness in God. Be attached only to God. And then what? Well, let's shift to our other passage. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. What does it mean to be impure? That's sexual sin? Sexual sin is one attachment. Impurity is when we are contaminated by a multitude of attachments. To be impure is to be contaminated with attachments that limit our vision and movement. When we surrender these attachments, we see the fullness of God, and then we see through the eyes of God, and then we engage with the things, the people, and the situations in our lives with a completely new relationship. It's easy to see with money and property. Let's take two examples from this excruciating non-attachment to family and see how that might work. Because frankly, the yoga of Christ should empower us to love, right? Attachment to spouse normally means, I want this person. I need this person. That sounds so romantic, doesn't it? Ladies, you remember those days? I want you. I need you. I can't live without you. Well, let's be honest about those statements. Why do you need them? Why do you want them? Usually it's because they meet our needs and make us happy, right? And what happens when these people fail to meet our needs and fail to make us happy? We experience anger and resentment and bitterness. What would happen if you gave up that attachment? What would happen if your needs and your happiness were complete in your relationship and experience of God? Well, then your wife's failures are more easily accepted. They're not threatening. They don't make you angry. They don't make you resentful. You find that you can love this person in spite of their imperfections, which then empowers them to put away the imperfections. Absolute. This yoga of Christ makes love work. Detachment makes love work. I love my children. I love them so much. I'm attached to them so much. I make sure they behave in certain ways, that they pursue certain goals. Not for my ego, certainly. Not to keep them from embarrassing me. Not to live misportions of my dreams through them. Now, to be honest, before I began the practice of the yoga of Christ, My children were often not comfortable in my presence. Why? They thought they were being judged, condemned, controlled. Oh, will this please Dad? Will he be mad at Dad? Is he going to judge me? I had a strong need for them to be a certain way as proof that I was a good parent. Frankly, that's evidence that there's a hole in me. Since that hole has been filled with God's love, they have suddenly become wonderful no matter what. Whether they're meeting my needs or desires or not, they just look absolutely wonderful to me. I'm free from the burden of expectation. They are free from the burden of judgment. And the pure love of Christ is now a more real possibility in our relationships. May we take his yoke and practice the yoga of Christ and become light. May we become pure in heart, uncontaminated with and unrestricted by attachments, free to see God, free to be filled with God's love, enabling us to see with his eyes and to love with his heart. Thank you so much.